Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are pretty cool, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
So Jonah, thanks for being on time today. Do you remember how when we used to go to school growing up, it was very hard for us to be on time?
Yes, I do remember. Before we could drive, I remember waiting for the school bus and we could see it out the front window of our house. So you would be like frantically trying to get your backpack and shoes on before the bus came. And then you kind of see it coming and you try to like run. We had a super long driveway, so you'd have to run down it.
Such a long driveway, yeah.
And then if you missed the bus, then our parents had to drive us to school. And I remember just like, I feel that's maybe where like so much internalized anxiety comes from, like just like knowing any second now the bus
this
is going to
come. This bus is going to come with it. Yeah. And we would always cut it super close or miss the bus. And I remember once you and I had the same Doc Martin like high tops growing up. I guess, I don't know if you'd call those high tops, but same Doc Martin boots. And one time I wasn't going to school. I think I was sick and you were running really late for the bus and you grabbed mine and kind of ran to the bus half in them. But then once you got to school, you realized they were too small on you.
What's funny is I don't remember that, but I feel that's the kind of thing that would happen to me. And I would just be like, okay. And I would like never, it wouldn't be that big of a deal to me at that time in my life.
Yeah. It reminds me of the time that I got called into the nurse's office at school because your like piercing in your chin fell out and she wanted me to help with it for like sanitary reasons because we were related. Anyways, we had a lot of adventures going to school. I remember then once we were in high school, we were always late because you would make us late.
Yeah. Well, you were like an honor student. I was not in any honors program. I feel like we had to be at school so 7:30 in the morning. So I was always running late. And I felt like you were basically late to first period probably almost every day because of me.
Yeah. But I also felt really cool being late to school because of you. Or just coming to school with you in general, because you would blast all this punk music, and it like really made me feel cool to have that like playing out of the car when I was like, you know, I wasn't really a legit punk. I wasn't a legit punk such as yourself, Jonah.
Well,
yeah. Believe it or not,
I just remember like how weird it was parking in our school parking lot because there would be like. Right, like I had like a Volkswagen Jetta, but then there would be like super rich kids where I'd like park between like two Hummers, and just how weird that seems now for like these like 16-year-old kids to have like sports cars.
Totally. And I remember how weird it was because we would pull in and everyone was listening to quiet music and our car was like, we're going to the, like it was like the Yelling Guys, which I guess is hardcore punk.
Which band was the Yelling Guys?
They were all Yelling Guys. Yeah. It was always a song with Yelling Guys.
Yeah, I had some, our dad's friend helped us get some like 12-inch speakers I had in the trunk. I had a really loud system.
That's right, you had speakers and it feels so unnecessary.
Yeah, it was like, it was so unnecessary, but it got so loud. But yeah, I mean, that was, I like just loved listening to loud music in my car, which now what if I pull next to a car and it's playing loud music, it's something I cannot even imagine myself doing. I'm trying to like, yeah, but it's back then, I don't know.
You were just the coolest, Jonah, and thank you for giving me so much cred.
No problem. I didn't even know that I was giving you cred. I thought I was just making you late to class.
You have been our whole lives. So,
well,
what a sweet moment.
Well, you've done well for yourself too. So don't sell yourself short.
Thanks so much. Well, let's get into our guest today. our guest today, we're so, so excited to have him. He's an actor, he's a writer, he's a comedian. You've seen him on Southside, High Maintenance, The Boys, and as Jared on Insecure, and his recent work on HBO's Pause with Sam J. But most importantly, he hosts a wildly popular podcast, My Mama Told Me. Please welcome Langston Kerman.
Wow. Ooh, can I say that was the sweetest interaction I've dreamt of having those interactions with my siblings, of somebody just being like, you've done pretty well for yourself too. Beautiful.
Well, it's have you ever had someone tell you you've given them a lot of credit? It's a hard thing to sort of respond to.
It is. And I didn't,
you probably
I
get
didn't
it all
envy
time.
Your position in that moment to have to come up with a charming retort.
It doesn't happen often. That's unprecedented.
Yeah. No, it was a tough spot to be in. I too found myself taking the bus to school, but I don't know that we had the same bus experience. I wasn't often late because the bus is where most of the fights happened at my school. And so Papa needed a front seat to whoever was going to be punching each other in the head that day. And that was always exciting.
Wow. Wow. I don't remember a ton of fights on the buses with us, but I think, yeah.
They're the best fights, I would say. Of all the fights, the bus fights are the best because the space is super contained and it's just, it can only last like 12 seconds before like so either an obstruction happens, somebody's body gets in the way or the bus driver pulls over and now an adult who we don't respect is involved. It's all fun.
Right, right. Now, were you ever involved in the fights or were you just like kind of the audience?
No, never. I'm a coward. I instigated fights. I chimed in when it seemed as if nobody was paying attention and sort of added punchlines to whatever punching was happening. But no, I wasn't yeah. fighting anybody.
Those bus drivers are definitely not paid enough for having to deal with that.
No, and it shows. They do not care for the work and they do not care about the children that they're transporting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So did you transition to driving to school or what was your kind of high school getting to school experience like?
Yeah, I took the bus through middle school and then because my middle school was way further than my high school was from my home. And then by the time I got to high school, I think I either got like rides because I would like show up super early for like basketball practice or whatever activities, or I would walk. Which I think by then I had like a group of friends who was like, yeah, we'll walk a mile and a half together and that's cool. And I don't know why that was cool. I think in retrospect, we should have happily learned, you know, how to do something else. But we were like, yeah, we're the walk guys. This is nice.
We were weirdly not, it was a rule. We were not allowed to walk to school. Whoa. So it was like, we lived pretty close to our school. We were probably like a mile and a half away from our school, which actually not that close. No. I can't imagine actually. But like, yeah, people would, it was very like, you know, if you get caught walking to school, actually, I don't know what would happen.
I don't know. You weren't allowed to leave. You weren't allowed to go to McDonald's. You'd sneak out and go to McDonald's for lunch, but you could get in big trouble. Were you allowed to leave your school? Yeah, we felt we were very kind of contained.
Oh, so these were school rules. This wasn't just like your family said
no,
you can't go.
Yeah, the school wouldn't let us walk to school. It was like, I remember there was this one girl, Caitlin Stork, who literally lived across the street from the school and she had to take the bus.
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
Yeah.
She had to take the bus and she was a really good student. She was maybe our valedictorian or like salutatorian.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it either. I'm not going to help you.
But she you know, she took the bus every day.
What a waste of taxpayers' money. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I remember for a senior prank, someone broke into where they kept the buses. And slash the tires on all the buses.
That was my senior year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they do that your year too?
No, I don't think so. But I think I heard about it. I mean, it's big news.
It was so great because we got to go to school late then. It was so. Yeah. It was so. And actually, my friend was one of the people who did it. Like there was like a group of like six guys, and they were like, he told me about it the night before they did it. And he was going to, I'm giving you a lot of details. He was going to be my prom date. And was like, and there was a rule that like, if someone gets caught doing a senior prank, they won't be allowed to go to prom.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I'm going to do this prank. He's like, I don't think we're going to get caught, but if we do, then like, I won't be able to go to prom. And I was like, I'll go without you. Like I didn't care.
Hey, just a heads up. So... I might ruin your prom night forever and always so that I could be a part of a senior prank. Don't worry. Either way, it's going to be worth it.
Exactly. But then the next day we went to school, it was like on the news, like Orange schools are delayed 2 hours because like there was, because like the, something with the buses and whatever. And I was like, I was so like freaked out about it because I was like, am I complicit in this crime? Like I was so like freaking out. Then once I got to school, I was like loving that I knew, because I kept going up to people and being like, who do you think did this? This is wild. I was so excited to be like in on the crime that I was just like, man, this is crazy. Like we better find out who these hooligans are. Like, you know, like, and I knew everyone who did it and I was just like loving it. And then they all did get found out a few days later. And then but then the school let them go to prom because they didn't want to ruin their dates' prom experiences.
Oh, nice.
But again, as someone, my focus was very much on myself going to, like, and so I remember being like, you guys didn't have to do that. Like we would have still all gone, I think. But maybe not everyone felt that way.
Sure.
Because I wasn't going from like a, this was like a friend I was going with. It wasn't like a romantic, like, if I don't get to go with him, I won't have like.
You were fine either way.
Yeah.
A big deal.
Yeah.
I will say that I do appreciate a senior prank that actually has an effect out in the world. Like, it's much better than. I feel like for our senior prank, somebody like put a bunch of baby oil on the main steps and just made people fall and shit. And it's like, okay, well, that's not helpful, gentlemen. Like, let's do something that actually benefits the whole of the senior class. You know what I mean?
It was so great because I remember we had like tests and stuff. I mean, probably nobody else was thinking as much about this because I was very into school, but we had tests that like, we didn't have to finish them because of the time limits. Like it sort of like academically was like very helpful too. But yeah, it totally, like I remember, I think it was when I was in, we had eighth grade in the high school. And when I was in eighth grade, Jonah, do you remember this? The seniors put a bunch of grasshoppers like all over the school. And then by the time we got to school, they had basically all been like vacuumed up, which just felt like so sad. Because it was just like they just killed a bunch of grasshoppers before we got in.
You guys just set up a grasshopper genocide real quick. And everyone got their day like regular.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah, I remember during graduation, they were like, when you shake the principal's hand, put a marble in your hand. Everyone's going to give him a marble and then he's not going to know what to do with all the marbles. And like, I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, yeah. I just want to get out of here. I'm 18. Like,
good for you, Jonah. You made the right choice.
Thank you.
Did people do it?
I don't know. Maybe some people did. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I hope it was just one kid. One kid did the marble thing and tried to convince a lot of other people to do it, but only he did it and it was embarrassing and sort of awkward for him.
Yeah. And so that's like, where am I supposed to get marbles? I don't even know where you get marbles. 1998. I don't know.
That feels like you could have figured that out if you...
Honestly, 1998 feels like prime time for finding marbles.
Yeah, I guess
somewhere.
You're right. I guess you're right. You're right. There are probably marble stores all around us.
I bet you at that time could get marbles at like a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. Like a little... in like a little fishnet bag.
Yeah, Walgreens had to have a ton of marbles back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would you get them today?
Amazon.com.
Yeah, you're
from
right.
From Daddy Bezos himself. He'll send you marbles.
You're right. What do you do with marbles? You play a game?
Yeah. Technically, I believe the game is that you're meant to knock the marbles out of the center. That like it's like a competition, almost like what's the slidey ball thing? You know what I'm talking about? The big
You're standing and you like push the ball on the big thing.
Yeah. Oh, shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard.
Right. I love that we needed help for for very popular American games. But the point is, marbles is sort of like shuffleboard, but it's more in the middle. So like you create a center and then you try to get your marble in the center and then you try to knock other people's marbles out of the center is my understanding.
I think you're right. I just remember that. Do you remember that Marble Madness video game? Do you remember that, Langston?
No, I don't.
It was like a game where you kind of like tilted the screen and you would like have like a marble that would move around. It was pretty cool game.
I remember the analog version of that, not the video game, but those like cheap toys that you would get where like there's a marble and you have to make follow the path with it. I assume it's something similar to that.
Yeah.
Well, there's also those little remember like in when you would go home from a birthday party, if you would get like a little bag of stuff, we would always get those little squares that like had a little marble or had like a little ball in them, and they'd go through a maze and you would, do you know what I'm talking about?
That's that shit. Yeah. Yep. There it is.
Yeah.
I wonder if they still, well, probably have them on Amazon.com.
Daddy Bezos. He makes
they
it
do.
All.
They do. I worked at a gift shop last year, briefly, or a couple years ago, and we sold like free trade. Like they make all that stuff. You can get it like free trade, like locally made toys for kids now.
Who are these local people that are still carving weird mazes and then putting marbles in them?
I don't know. It's a good question. It's a great question.
I don't think I have the reason. One of the reasons I think I never played with marbles is because I would be so mesmerized by them because I really didn't know if they were cat's eyes.
Oh.
Are some of them called like cat's eye marbles?
They look like cat's eyes.
Yeah, I think I've heard that. Langston, to give you a little background, Vanessa also had a box collection of antique boxes. Just, she was really drawn to fine craftsmanship at that age. Just okay. The craftsmanship.
That's such a nice way of putting it.
That is, and it's also a very concise way of summing up a person's situation, let's call it. No. My sister collected boxes. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, like we'd go on a trip and I'd buy like, you know, I'd get a little box that said like Florida or something.
Oh boy. I don't think I had any collections that even come close to collecting boxes. I think I inherited my dad's coin collection and then moved on.
Oh, that's yeah. Do you still have it? Do you still have the coins?
No, I wasn't invested at all. You know, it's one of those things where like where you think that you're finding something valuable because you find some penny that says like 1939 and you're like, hey, dad, check this out. And then he looks at it and he's like, well, it's technically not worth anything because it has a S on it and not a D, or it isn't clean the right way, or the president is facing in the wrong direction. It's like, all right, man, fuck off. I'm going to bed. What is this game that you're playing here?
Yeah, I could see that being very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been as lucrative as your box collection recently.
I was going to say, I would really accept most any box into the collection. And, you know, porcelain boxes, wooden boxes, just, you know, anything. And
perhaps
and
a box from Daddy Bezos at Amazon.com.
Yes. You know, and look, are the boxes all still in my parents' basement? And are they, every time I come home, are they like, Vanessa, you got to get rid of these boxes? Yes. And my mom was like, you can take like a selection of the boxes back with you to LA and then we'll donate the rest. And I'm like, I'm keeping all the boxes and they're staying right here.
I'm not moving these boxes at all. Good luck, family.
We got these boxes for life and everybody knows it. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with Langston.
And we're back. Today, we're going to talk about something that Vanessa and I were not familiar with until this week, but now we're kind of obsessed with.
Oh.
And
that,
yes. And this was your topic, Langston, so thank you for that. It is the And One mixtape. And
yeah.
So, for our listeners that aren't familiar with this, could you maybe just sort of explain a little bit what it is?
Yeah. So, the And One mixtapes were sort of America's introduction to street basketball. It was like a bunch of random dudes who were not professional basketball players, at least in the traditional sense, your NBA players, but were fucking talented, like very talented people. And they just were nasty. They would do cool moves that weren't even legal in professional basketball, weird crossovers and dunks, and they dance in your face after they embarrassed you in front of your family. And I loved it. I couldn't get enough of the N1 mixtapes as a child.
So like, what age were you sort of when you were like peak N1 fan?
Oh, I think I probably really found N1 around like 8 to 10, I would say. N1 at the time, there were a bunch of players who were really cool, but on top of that, they also started a clothing brand, And at the time, the clothing brand was really cool because it was really big shirts and really baggy shorts to play basketball in. You know how easy that makes for playing basketball.
Totally.
And on top of that, all their shirts had like cool like phrases written on them, basically like trash talking phrases. So it'd be like, you brick so many shots, you could build a house. And that would be written on the shirt. Or it would be like, you don't dribble good and your mom's a whore. And like that would be on the shirt. And you'd get so excited because you were shit talking in your clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking about how it is such a strong move to like wear clothes that say stuff on them.
Yes.
Like yeah. In any. Yeah.
It's very daring.
It's very
much in the way that I and you know, it maybe it's the same as a person putting on Juicy when maybe that thing isn't that juicy. You know what I mean? And
yeah, exactly.
You're wearing the shirt that you want to believe you can for stuff you think you can do out in the world. You know what I mean?
It feels like you have to have so much confidence with it. I'm going to make a comparison that might not really track, but I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot, people do so much Halloween decorating. Mm-hmm. And we were outside, I was walking with my friend outside this beautiful house and it was so decorated for Halloween in such a crazy way, like more than most houses. And then the guy who lived there was like outside on his phone and he was just like on this, like on his front porch, like talking on the phone. And I was like, I feel like the story isn't going to land well, but I was like, is he so embarrassed to be like an adult man, like standing in front of a house that's decorated so much? Now follow me here. In the same way that like, if you're wearing a shirt that says like anything, like don't talk to me before I have my morning coffee or whatever. Do you like, then when you make eye contact with other people, are you like, I don't know, I shouldn't have done this, you know?
I'm sorry. I didn't, you can talk to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that story might not have been as relevant as I thought it was about the guy in the Halloween house. But I just think like, yeah, very cool that And1 did the trash talking for you, you know?
Yeah, it was just a dope period in, I think, in basketball where we were transitioning out of sort of like this buttoned up version of what basketball was, which is a weird thing to think about in terms of basketball. But it was like, this is back when, you know, NBA players were expected to wear suits everywhere they went. And like Michael Jordan was just a nice, this is before we knew he was a monster, but Michael Jordan was a nice man who loved his family and never did anything wrong. And then, you know, And1 came around and they were just like, hey man, I'm about to dunk on you in front of everyone that knows you and cares about you. It was great.
Yeah. Was that the era of like Detroit Pistons, like the Bad Boys?
This is years after Bad Boys.
Years after Bad Boys. Okay.
This would be sort of in the wake of the this is like late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
So like Allen Iverson, I think in a lot of ways is kind of synonymous with, not synonymous, but sort of like runs parallel with like the And1 culture, if that makes sense.
Got it. I was really into sports until about like seventh grade. So all of my references are like, now I'm like, oh, is this guy still playing? My dad's like, yeah, he's a coach. But I've been watching a lot of the And1 videos. And one player I've been very impressed with is the professor.
Oh, the professor, of course.
Yes. I mean, could you describe him? Do you have any thoughts on the professor?
Oh, I have plenty of thoughts on the professor.
I thought you might.
The professor was white people's first introduction to the And1 mixtapes. And he was fun because And1 was so much about shit talking, right? I think it, in some ways it also was sort of like a cool liaison into comedy where it was like, I like sports. And then they say mean things when they play sports. This is hilarious. So it was all of that for me. But the professor is interesting. His name is Grayson, by the way. So he's very white for anyone who's unfamiliar. But the professor professor was sort of like this cute blonde-haired kid who was playing with all these big, like, athletic black dudes, and he was nice. He could dribble better than almost everybody. His passes were insane. He did crazy layups and sort of trick moves, and no one that they played against took him seriously until he would embarrass everybody, which only added to the pizzazz of it all.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And what's more amazing is the way they're doing it in these clothes, like you were saying, that are so big that you're dribbling between their legs. And it's like, it's insane. Have you followed what the professor has been doing more recently?
I have. And he's now turned into some sort of Christian basketball player where he like goes from random park to random park across the world now. He like has a very popular YouTube following and Instagram following where he'll go to like Singapore and just play random people at parks there and then like cut up like footage of him crossing people over and then hugging them afterwards and telling them that God loves them and yeah, it's fascinating.
Wow.
Man. Yeah, he's taking that street ball thing in a whole different direction, I guess.
He has. There's prayer now in it. And I knew him when he was getting yelled curse words. But, you know, it's different vibes, I guess.
For sure. Did you play the And1 video game at all? We found out about the video game recently.
I did not play the And1 video game. I know nothing of this.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that it came out in 2006. I have a couple facts here.
Oh, nice.
The PlayStation 2 version received, quote, mixed reviews, while the Xbox Xbox version received generally unfavorable reviews.
Wow.
So it seems like you didn't miss much.
No, and thank God. So if it came out in 2006, I had just graduated from high school. And I think by that time I was pretty, I knew I wasn't going to make the NBA. So I had sort of moved on from my dreams of playing. Certainly I wasn't playing video games of And1 mixtapes, but, damn, that's a shame. They had their big shot and they blew it.
Yeah,
it's true. It's true. Did you play a lot of kind of basketball growing up or in high school during that period of your life?
I did. I played basketball. That was my main thing through junior year of high school. And then I got cut from the team and then ended up like writing poetry after that. So I took a big turn.
Wow.
But even after that, like I then technically made the team my senior year, but I quit to continue writing poetry. But then in college, I ended up playing as a practice player for my women's basketball team. So I was like basically like showing up every day to like get beat up on by these very talented girls. So it you know, I love basketball. I was playing, you know, for most of my life.
I think giving up basketball for poetry is pretty cool. I think that's a pretty cool move.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if most people would agree, but I appreciate your encouragement.
What kind of poems were you writing at that time?
I think in high school it was mostly love poems to girls who were either partially interested or had moved on from whatever our situation was. That's probably the major theme of everything I was writing.
And were you giving them to the girls, or were you sort of just kind of brooding with them?
Oh no, I made sure you heard it. If if you dated me, you heard those poems. Did it fix any of our situations? It did not. But you were gonna get every word I wrote down.
And were you like keeping yourself to like? Were you like, I want to write a poem for this girl, but I want it to be like iambic pentameter, or like I want it to be a limerick. I want it to,
oh no, this was this was 2004 when limericks no longer mattered, and right. Iambic pentameter meant shit to any girls that I dated, so it was mostly just free verse. It was me just writing down my thoughts. I had the good fortune of going to a high school that had like a pretty large spoken word club. There were like 60 kids in the program in my high school. And so with that, I think we just it wasn't as like weirdo lame as I think it could have been if this were like one of those weird, like three person clubs where our, right. our books get knocked out of our hands and we don't know what to do with ourselves kind of thing.
And sorry, one more question about this. Would you read them the poems or would you give them to them?
So thank you for asking. No, I'd often read the poems at our spoken word, like, concerts. Concerts, the wrong word, but it was sort of like our spoken word your performances shows, yeah. shows. I would read the poems there, with the hopes that they would show up to said performances and they'd be, left so aflutter by the things that I said that they would come back to me and our romance would begin again.
Did you get into slam poetry at all? Because that seems like a really, like a, between basketball and poetry, that seems like this sort of performative type of poetry, you know. I don't know if that Saul Williams, all that stuff, was that era?
Yeah, Saul Williams was exactly that era, and that is exactly why I think I gravitated so much to poetry. Like, I was already writing poetry, right? I was interested in it, but then, you know, you're coming out of sports, and it's like, wow, I want to compete. I want to do a thing. And so slam became like a nice transition into that. And I grew up in Oak Park in, outside of Chicago. So I know you guys are from Chicago too. Yeah,
we're from Cleveland, but I lived in Chicago for a long time.
Oh, tight. After college. So you know Oak Park then. And yeah. So Chicago has the largest, even today has the largest youth slam in the world.
Wow.
And really?
So,
wow.
Yeah, it's this thing called Louder Than a Bomb. And so, like, our team would compete every year, and it became like a cool thing where, like, now I'm writing poetry, but I'm writing poetry to fuck people up. You know what I mean? Instead of just writing it for sad reasons.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did you ever, speaking of being in, did you, not to take it away from your I mean, I love hearing about your poetry. I feel like that's so.
Please,
it also really served
you. I
don't
run from any of this.
but just being from Chicago, did you ever see the And One tour like in person? Like when they went to Chicago, did you go?
I didn't. I wish I had. I don't think that I had like the wherewithal as like a young person. I don't know if you guys relate to this at all, but I think a part of me always treated that as like a foreign thing, that like, oh, it's like seeing your favorite person in concert. It wasn't until I got to like high school that I was like, oh shit, they might actually come to where I live. It was always like, well, I'll never be in the same room as the professor or hot sauce. You know what I mean? Like, it was just me it never even crossed my mind that I could go and see them. So I never got to do it.
Yeah. I remember being like in that kind of like pre going to concert age where like, I'm a little older than you. I'm 41. And so I remember like all these kids coming to school wearing like American Gladiator shirts. And they're like, we also went to see American Gladiators at like the arena. I was like, how did you guys know about, like, how do you even find out about stuff? I guess.
But
people would go to that kind of stuff.
I remember my dad one year took me to Family Double Dare. Like, but not the in studio one, the one that they would just like
tour. Yes.
Yeah, they would just go on tour and be in like a stadium somewhere and like do like random families and not film it. But like Mark Summers would be there.
Yeah.
And I remember him like pacing the like audience being like, we need another kid. Who's going to be our kid? And me going crazy. And he looked right at me and moved to a different person. Oh. And that's why I've always maintained fuck Mark Summers.
Yeah.
For the rest of my life, I will go to my grave saying, fuck you, Mark Summers. I'll never forgive you.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we just watched a Nickelodeon documentary, and Mark Summers, I think, was probably hating every minute of that.
He's in it a lot. Also, he did say that at one point his kids said to him, like, because he was going on those tours with Double Dare, and his kids were like, why do you spend the weekend with other people's kids but not us? And so then he said, like, the next day after his kids said that to him, he quit. So actually, you were part of the thing that got him to, like, stop working. So in some ways, you got back at him.
He looked me dead in my eyes and he was like, I got to get back to my family.
Yeah. That's probably why he didn't pick you, because he probably felt so warm towards you. Like he was like, if I pick this kid, then it's going to truly break my heart.
He's like, so I can't pass this curse on to another beautiful child. I have to end this here.
Yeah. So he picked like a kid that he was like, oh, this kid'll
yeah,
do.
Look at this uggo over here. Yeah, yeah, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let him pull a flag out of a giant nose.
Mark Summers. Also,
Mark Summers.
He doesn't talk about it on the documentary, but he famously has a lot of OCD, which who doesn't? But
sure. And I have to imagine that job must have contributed to it.
Well, that's the thing, is like, is it the chicken or the, like, what? That job does seem, I mean, so fun for kids, but like there's so much disgusting, even just like imagery.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, green snot coming out of a giant nose, and you have to do this. I assume they're filming what, like 4 episodes a day?
Yeah.
5 days a week, just to be able to satisfy our sick need to watch more noses have more boogers in them. It's all bad.
Yeah, but then he got right out of there once his kids complained. And
maybe I need to make my peace with Mark Summers. Maybe I can't go to my grave with these negative feelings towards.
It could be kind of liberating, you know, just to let it go, not be carrying that around.
Yeah.
all this gack covering my heart.
Yeah.
Is,
but you know, if it drives you, then hold on to
that's
it.
That's true. You know? You can use that as inspiration. That's sure. True.
If it's helping you to, did you watch a lot of Nickelodeon growing up?
I loved it. I was a Nickelodeon kid. I know there are some Disney kids and.
Oh, we were Nickelodeon too. Yeah.
Yeah. Disney kids weirded me out, I'll be honest.
Well, because you had to pay for the Disney Channel. So they, you know.
That was a bigger issue for me as well. Our cable was limited. Nickelodeon was like edgy and cool. And like, I was talking to somebody about it today, actually, that like it didn't. It is just now occurring to me as of recently that like all that had like Wu-Tang Clan on and Mary J. Blige, and they were singing their real songs, not like kid versions of the songs, in front of audiences of 12-year-olds. It was fascinating
that
work.
That is pretty crazy. Yeah. And if you watch this documentary, they also, Coolio talks about how like he did the song for Kenan and Kel's show. Mm-hmm. And it was like the most popular song he ever, like it was like it was like a huge deal, like it was like, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
If that doesn't make you do your hair the way Coolio does his hair, I don't know what has, you know what I mean?
Right, totally.
You dedicate your work to being a talented rap artist, and the thing that propels you into stardom is making the theme music to Two Boys arguing about orange soda. It's a bad combination for an adult man.
That's tough. That is tough.
I mean, then he went on and did Dangerous Minds, that music
for Paradise.
Yeah.
I mean.
And all we have now is Michelle Pfeiffer in a leather jacket telling us that we can get out the ghetto. We can make something of ourselves. Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, I don't think that movie would probably be getting made anytime again soon. I don't know.
I don't think so either. I think that's why we don't bring it up for positive reasons anymore.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk really briefly about your podcast, My Mama Told Me, which is on an amazing network, I hear. But I mean, how would you sort of describe the podcast, maybe for people who haven't heard it, who haven't heard it before?
I love conspiracy theories, and I happen to be black and have a ton of friends who happen to be black. So we just talk about black people and their conspiracy theories, which oftentimes are there's a lot of Venn diagram crossover between white conspiracy theories, but there's a different sort of like twist right at the end, which makes it pretty, it makes it fun and interesting and sort of a more nuanced conversation than every other insane person that's on the internet.
For sure. I mean, do you have any, I mean, because to me, it's fascinating. There's so many kind of interesting topics. Are there any that you've done that kind of stand out to you or any that, like, I just didn't know about so many of these conspiracies, so they're really interesting to listen about. Are there any favorites you have?
Yeah, I mean, I have a ton of them. Carl Tart, who's a very funny comedian, improv sketch dude who came on, and it's a conspiracy theory I've heard for years now, where we talked about the theory that women put menstrual blood. You can't eat a strange woman's spaghetti because women put their own menstrual blood in that spaghetti and make you fall in love with them.
Well, I can speak to that. That's true.
And that's something you heard when you were younger?
It's something that I heard more actually in early adulthood than I heard as like a young person. But he's from Mississippi, I believe. And it is a very Southern thing to like, think that, you know, it's like it has to do with like juju and magic and all that kind of stuff, that hoodoo I believe is the sort of like actual term that's connected to it, but it's some sort of witch doctory shit.
Yeah Wow. It was interesting too. I mean, we've been listening to your podcast, and it's interesting too that there is something, I mean, that's interesting that you heard it more as an adult, but there is also, like, I remember so many of those conspiracy theories from being a kid. Like, because as a kid, like, you're really like, oh, this must be true. Like, this must be, like, I was listening to the Tommy Hilfiger episode, and it's like, we all thought, we were like, he was on Oprah, he said it. Like, and it's true. It's like, which episode was it? It's like,
There's literally no evidence of this actually existing.
Yeah.
What is it about Tommy Hilfiger?
That Tommy Hilfiger, at some point in his early in sort of like the transition of Hilfiger clothing, Tommy Jeans, whatever it was, made a big announcement on Oprah that he did not want black people wearing his clothing. He made it for like a certain class of people, and black people did not represent that class.
And what I think I heard, the version I think I heard was like, Oprah got so mad at him that she like yelled at him on the show, and she would never have him back again. And that maybe the reason we hadn't seen it was because she refused to air the episode.
Yeah. I similarly had heard this story of the bravery that Oprah put her foot down, and she said, "Get out of here, Tommy. You never show your face around here again. You're dead to me." And then that had like, it had squashed his career at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fascinating to think about how these things spread during that era, like before the internet, how everyone, we could all hear these stories that, like, how did they spread? Like, how did people find out about this stuff?
Well, it's so fun because in doing the research, what I discovered is that it actually came from basically like some chain mail, like a chain email from the Philippines. And it did actually come from a shitty thing that Tommy said. And shitty is a weighted term, but basically he went out and he said like, "Hey, please stop wearing knockoff versions of my clothing. It doesn't look as good. I don't like that." And a bunch of people in other countries were like, "Hey, forget you, man. You're like ruining our sweet deal when we make these nice knockoffs, and that's how we make our money." And so they made up a weird statement about Tommy Hilfiger saying this thing. And then the email got circulated so many times that we in our middle schools were like, "Hell yeah, there it is. Oprah. Tommy's a racist."
Yeah. And you know what's so crazy is like, even though that stuff is so like, you hear it a lot in childhood and stuff, like I still feel like I still like every time I'd see an ad for like a Tommy thing, I'd be like, why are people supporting this guy? Like even as an adult, I'm like, yeah, this guy's a monster. I don't know what, you know,
but. Yeah, I there's so many things that were hugely problematic and or wrong from these conspiracy theories that circulate from being young that I still, like you said, I'm still like, I know it's not right, but I can't support old Tommy Hilfiger, even though he's done nothing wrong. He seems honestly like a sweet man.
Sweet, nice. Yeah. You know, there's also like a thing with Jewish people, I feel like, where your parents tell you that everyone's anti-Semitic. So mm-hmm. you sort of think that like everything is somehow made by like an anti-Semitic, like you can't, you shouldn't watch this or do this thing or this thing because they don't like Jews.
Absolutely.
You know.
That was, I don't, there's, we, in a similar episode, we talked about how some people theorize that the, that Timberlands were made by the KKK, that the entire, like, the thing is owned by the KKK, and the tree on the Timberland logo is actually connected to hangings for slaves, right? Or for black people in general. But that said, one of the things that, that sort of gets uncovered in all of that is that Timberlands were actually originally conceived and owned by Jewish people. But because of this weird rumor that got started, they got associated with so much anti-Semitism that it like did do damage to the product at certain points.
Wow. Wow.
That's wild. But yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting parallel because I think that the idea of like a black conspiracy theory probably makes so much sense in the fact that like, you know, brought over, you so marginalized, you know, taken advantage of, brought over by, you know, slavery, all this stuff. Obviously, like, how could you not think that things are against you on some level, like with these conspiracy theories? Do you think that's an element of it?
Yeah, I do. And I think in a, in an interesting way, or a really like important way, the goal isn't so much to just keep this like locked on black people, but to sort of show the ways that like it kind of crosses over into all of our shit. You know what I mean? That like
right.
much in the way that that, you know, these weird stories come up in the black community, they also come up in a lot of other marginalized communities. And then our American community as a whole, if whatever that means, if that exists. But like, I do think that that it's not the, it's not meant to be a thing where it's like, this is for us and y'all ain't supposed to hear it. It's like,
yeah.
no, listen to it and recognize that you probably heard something very similar to it, even totally. If it isn't necessarily verbatim what you grew up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. I think that, and I think that your podcast really does that really well. And some of them are so dark.
Yeah,
like the Brandy stuff I found to be like really dark.
Yeah, the Moesha. All of that
stuff. Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, I just didn't know any of this stuff. So yeah, there's so much there.
Some of them get real sad if you take them seriously, which is why I try to laugh through all of it because it's heavy shit.
We're gonna take another quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. And Langston, now we're going to play a game with you where we bring up nostalgic products, like product shows, stuff from our childhood that are now making a comeback. And if you're into them, you can give them a yes-stalgia.
Yes-stalgia.
And if you're not into them, you give them a no-stalgia.
No-stalgia.
But you're making a face like you look impressed by kind of how fun these puns are. And
I'm wow-stalgia'd by what you're putting together here. I love it.
Thank you very much. Well, to give you the first, you know, product, a popular snack that was discontinued but is now coming back is 3D Doritos. Doritos has announced that their three-dimensional snack, dubbed 3D Crunch, has hit the stores. They come in spicy ranch and chili cheese nacho. And instead of the traditional flat triangles that, you know, we're all used to and honestly love, they come in a conical shape. And these were originally available between 1998 and 2004. But now they're back. What you know, are you a Dorito person? Are you excited about, you know?
I do love a Dorito. I'm a big fan and I do remember the 3D Doritos, but I am going to say nostalgia to the Whoa. Return of the 3D Dorito because
yes,
I am a much I have a much fonder, warmer memory of Bugles. And I think Bugles deserve to be brought yeah. back and celebrated properly instead of Doritos just recycling their same flavors with new stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a Bugle ripoff. Well, let me ask you something, Langston. Let me see if this statement from Rachel Ferdinando, that she's Frito-Lay's North American Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer. Mm-hmm. Let me see if the statement that she says changes your mind at all.
Okay.
What's exciting is that we didn't just bring back the original. We've evolved it to reflect the snacking trends of a new generation. We're thrilled to introduce a new version at a time when we could all use a small amount of joy. What do you think? They've evolved it. A new snacky
here's what
generation.
I don't like about that is okay. It feels like she's trying to make this about like the racial awakening of the country, but then pretend like it's just about bringing snacks. Do you know what I mean? Where she's like, America's in a tough place right now. We just had an insurrection. All kinds of horrible things are happening. But the Doritos company is really here to support you and bring you a little bit of joy. It's like, no, yeah. I don't need yeah. your trickery. Yeah. Just say. Yeah.
I see what yeah. you're saying. I'm not exactly sure when she made this statement, but it was definitely in response to something bad happening in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
It felt like, a puppy was murdered on their campuses. And she was like, well, Doritos 3D, I guess we got to bring it back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is really like it is a kind of a funny name though to be like this is a 3D Dorito because it's like you can touch all the sides. It like it's already 3D, isn't it? I mean, even if it's
yeah,
flat.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah.
We've been 3D this whole time.
Yeah, right. We're not living in Flatland, so everything is 3D. Yep. Did you guys ever watch Flatland? And it's a whole
I did anyways. Not, but
I didn't either.
No.
But
I think I either made it up or it was like a thing you watched.
It sounds a little
in
made
like
up.
Middle school math and it's
I remember Flat Stanley, but that's about as far as flat titles that I'm familiar with.
And what was Flat Stanley?
Flat Stanley was this thing that they would make kids take a picture with as like a way of you would mail him to different people on different like continents and countries and all that as a way of like pen pal sort of communication.
Okay.
And so you would send someone Flat Stanley and they would take a picture with Flat Stanley. And that's how you knew that Flat Stanley had like made it to the people you were communicating with across the world.
That does sound very fun to me.
This is probably like if there's younger people listening to this who grew up with like TikTok and all this stuff are probably like, man, people did insane stuff when they were kids in like yes. the 90s. Like it must sound just so wild.
Just the very concept of pen pals
yeah.
is in my mind one of the most embarrassing things that we could have done for generations. We were just writing random kids and being like, yo, I yeah. don't have enough friends. Will you be one of them?
Yeah. My friend from Chicago, Louie, he said when he was a kid, he was pen pals with Soleil Moon Frye. Is that I might have put the wrong emphasis on the wrong words, but Punky Brewster was his pen pal.
Whoa. Wow.
I know. I should find out more information. Like, was it at what point?
Right.
That sounds like maybe that's a made up story.
It's true.
Okay.
He's not a liar, Jonah. Okay. I knew you were going to say that. Don't doubt my friend.
It sounds like something you would say though in like sixth grade. Like
I
oh,
know,
yeah,
but he said it when we were like doing improv in Chicago. I believe.
Okay. Well.
I mean, if he made it up, it would actually be really. I'm pretty sure it's true. Well, I'm going to get confirmation.
Yeah, I feel like you got to do some digging yeah. on this.
And
this
would be a good thing to bring back. Maybe you can do an episode on this.
Yeah, you want to bring this back in another episode and be like, yeah. hey, quick update, y'all. Turns out he's a sick liar, and he led me on for years believing that Punky Brewster was his pen pal. Yeah,
which would be very sad. But
Vanessa, what are your thoughts on 3D
I'm kind of a, honestly, I'm kind of a nostalgia on it because, you know, I hadn't really thought about the Bugles element, Langston, but I do think, like, you're right. It's like, you know, stick to what you do. You guys are, you know, you already have, like, carved out such a wonderful space for yourselves in the mm-hmm. snack world. And, like, it's like, who needs it? And also, like, I don't want to burn Rachel Ferdinando of Frito-Lay North America, but have some self-awareness, I think, mm-hmm. and look, if Doritos ever wants me to do a commercial, I'll do it. But like, have some self-awareness of like, you know, that's, I don't know that it's going to bring that many people joy, you know, and if it is, you already, you know, I have a lot of thoughts and they're not coming together in a great way, but I'm a nostalgia for it.
I agree. I think you put it together just fine.
Thank you.
The people that want this don't need it. Let's not give it to them.
I'm a nostalgia also. I think Rachel just lost me with that statement about the snacking, revolving for snacking trends of a new generation. It feels just a bit self-important. It's like you took a Dorito and just copied a Bugle.
Yeah.
It's like this
Bugle thing really, it basically makes a decision for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So great. We're all three nostalgias for that one. The next one is about the TLC reunion. Mm. TLC, who are the best-selling American female group of all time, just announced their 2021 Celebration of Crazy Sexy Cool national tour. 18 cities featuring T-Boz and Chili. They're going to perform songs from the 1994 Diamond Certified album, 27 years later. The 90s themed shows will feature fan interaction, 90s fashion, surprise guests, and more. Joining TLC is Bone Thugs and Harmony plus special guests.
Oh, I'm a yesstalgia for that.
Yesstalgia.
That's pretty cool.
I agree. Yeah.
Me too.
Were you a big TLC fan?
I was deeply in love with each member at different points in my life, I think. I think Chili was my original first love, and then I think I eventually realized Left Eye was beautiful in her own right, and then super sad when she died, and then of course T-Boz. Who could not love T-Boz? So yeah, I loved, and their music was amazing. Yeah, I was into them. They were great.
And did you, by the way, did you see the VH1 2013, like that, when they did like the like movie about their lives where like people played them?
I did not. I valued my time and respected them too much to revisit whatever the attempt was going to be at. I think, wasn't Keke Palmer one of the
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought it was good. Jonah wasn't as into it.
We both saw it, I think, separately and never talked about it. I was like, did you see that documentary, that weird movie about them? And she was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I saw it too.
And like, I was like, it's pretty good, right? And Jonah was like, no. And so we were going to have you kind of be the like deciding, but respect that. I respect that.
I can't say it. I'm not going to be that person that says it's bad because I chose not to see it.
So yeah. You chose not to see it.
You're at a stalemate once again.
Yes. Well, I got some good news because the same announcement, they said a two-hour documentary special, Biography TLC, is going to come out on A&E in 2022.
Oh, nice. So
that'll be like a legit biography.
Because they have such an interesting story too, right? Where like they were selling so many records and everything, and they were like making no money, right? Like they got into a whole...
I feel like every artist before like 2000 pretty much got scammed out of most of their wealth. Like I was watching this thing about Cisco the other day, and the Thong Song, obviously his biggest hit, his most classic sort of like song. And as it turns out, he makes almost no money on the Thong Song because of that Living La Vida Loca line that like... because he threw that in there, and in the studio session, they go, hey man, I don't think we could clear that. And he goes, nah, it's cool. I know Ricky Martin's people. I'll take care of it. And then never does. And they release the song and Ricky Martin's people hear it and they sue the shit out of them. And then they settle and basically have to give like crazy points on every play just to be able to satiate, you know, the hole that he sort of created.
Cisco, follow up on your...
Yeah, that happened. That also happened with that that Verve song, Bittersweet Symphony. Mm. It's like that main song. So sampled from the Rolling Stones. And I think like they ended up getting like no... Rolling Stones got like all the publishing from the song because of some kind of deal. I mean, yeah, that was like the era where that kind of stuff would happen. It's so crazy. And any thoughts on Bone Thugs and Harmony?
Big fan.
We're from Cleveland, and Jonah, I don't know if you remember this, people would see, we had a mall in our suburb called Beechwood Place. And people would see, once in a while, they would see Bone Thugs at Beechwood Place. And they would be like, they would come into school and they would be like, I was at Beechwood Place and Bone Thugs. It's like, it was like a very suburban mall. So it just feels so funny, like that people would see them there. And, but it was like, those were the celebrities that would, like, you know, they'd sometimes go to, you, it was like, you could sometimes see them at Beechwood Place. And that was just like, kept everybody.
I can tell it was suburban because you're like, we saw Bone Thugs, and it's not naming which Bone Thug. Crazy Bone. It's just like, we saw all of Bone Thugs together. They shop at the mall at once.
Yes. I can think of like three times someone said to me, we saw Bone Thugs. Nobody ever called anyone out by name. That's a really good point.
It was like, we saw Wishbone. It was cool.
I don't remember that. I don't remember that, but I'm sure
I remember a bunch of times people like coming back from Beechwood Place and being so excited about it.
Langston, did you have any celebrity sightings at any like Chicago area malls growing up?
Oh, at the mall? I don't think so. I think I was a little too suburban, but not in a way that celebrities would come to our mall. It was more like suburban, sad suburban, if that makes sense. Like the North Riverside Mall was more a place where you could buy some Pelly Pelly jeans and then get shot at depending on the time of day you went. I didn't see anybody there. I would say the biggest celebrity interaction I had as a kid was going to Chicago State University like one time, and I was like 15, and Kanye's mom was the was a professor there, and so she had him basically give like a talk to kids, high school kids who were visiting. And so there were like 300 of us sitting, and this is before College Dropout even came out, just listening to Kanye make beats on the table. And like, he was doing like Spaceships and like all kinds of songs that ended up on College Dropout on the table, and being like, yeah, that's gonna be a hit right here, and check out this new thing I'm working on. And he'd like sing a new thing, and we were like, this dude's crazy, it's so cool. So yeah, I saw Kanye before before he turned into a different Kanye.
Wow, that is really amazing.
Yeah,
was a fun, that it, it's pretty cool. I got to see him like two or three times before College Dropout even existed. And that was like a wild transition to watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, okay. So this is a yes-stalgia for you, this TLC.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree. I'm also yes-stalgia for this. Very obsessed with them. And at camp, we did a lip-singing contest to Waterfalls, and I memorized the rap. Left Eye Does. And it's only like recently that I'm like, oh, I don't have to tell everybody that. I'm like, I don't have to do it for people at karaoke. Like, I don't have to like be so proud of that. It's sort of like, it's actually making me less likable.
I will say that was a weird way for you to introduce yourself to me, but I enjoyed it. Just not exactly what I was expecting.
Yeah, you've done some other stuff in us. You don't have to lead with that still.
It takes a lot of skill to do that. It's a very...
Hey, I'm Vanessa, and I saw a rainbow yesterday.
Sorry that I brought that up first.
So great. So we got three yes-stalgias for that.
Okay, three yes-stalgias for that. Okay, now finally, Verizon has brought back the Motorola Razr flip phone. Okay. And the new version has a full touchscreen and all the capabilities of a smartphone, but it folds in half like the classic Razr phone. But rather than a phone that becomes the size of a tablet when you flip it open, it just, when you flip it open, it becomes the size of a normal smartphone. And then it folds up so that it could like, gets really small, like it could fit in your pocket.
It's a nostalgia for me. I had to hear it all the way through, but I think I knew I was going to say no right from the beginning.
Yeah, I could tell you kind of wanted to say no to it, and I kind of kept giving you details.
I heard Motorola, and I was like, I'm good. I survived those years. I don't need to go back to whatever that experience was of weird colored Motorola Razrs.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, and this we didn't mention. It's the phone costs $1,500.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I guess it's like, imagine if you could fold your computer in half. I think I want to take this back already, but just thinking about, like,
say, that's what laptops do, is they fold in half.
No, but I mean, if you could, no, you're absolutely, but I think like these ones, you fold the screen in half, but am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you fold, if it's like your iPhone could just fold in half and be like half as tall.
Yeah.
But then it's like, so it's stubby.
So it's thicker, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. That doesn't sound good. If they want to bring back a phone that I think would have a big impact, bring back the Sidekick. I really enjoyed the Sidekick. I thought that it was innovative at the time and deserves another shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sidekick was really like when texting kind of first came out. If you had a Sidekick, it was like you could really get into it.
Right.
Versus having to do the whole T9, you know.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a Sidekick, Langston?
I didn't, and I was terribly jealous of everybody who did.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the one? It was the Sidekick, and there was the one that you chirp, where you could like chirp people with it. And I don't remember what it was called, but it was
Nextel.
I wanted a Sidekick and a Nextel, and I got neither. And for some reason, that worked out for me. You know, in the long run, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always wanted the Nokia, like that when they first came out, the Nokia phones that came in different colors, like you could get like it in like pastel pink or blue. And I remember some like girls magazine reading it and being like, all the celebs have like pastel colored phones.
Oh, like the little Nokia brick?
Like those little.
Yeah.
Like they had literally no like... You couldn't do anything on them except make phone calls, but
that's not true. You could play Snake, and that was a real fun game before we realized that other games existed.
Oh, okay. All right, well, maybe I should have gotten one.
I feel like this would be cool if we didn't already just have like iPhones and regular smartphones. Mm-hmm. Like this would be cool if it was like taking us from the flip phone to this, but I feel like it's kind of like a step backwards a little bit.
Yeah, it's you're reintroducing JNCO jeans, and like, right. I get it. There's like a nostalgic sort of want here for some people, but this isn't a great investment for most people. So I guess they price
it so high that it's just for people who are really rich to think it's like nostalgic. I don't know who the audience is.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
I can't imagine paying $1,500 for any phone personally.
No. You gotta like own a museum and really, you know what I mean? Put that next to a Picasso, I guess, and just say these are both art that nobody else could afford.
Yeah.
When me and my wife are out at the grocery store or something, if like produce is really expensive, I'll be like, and I made this joke to Vanessa yesterday too about something, I'd be like, does this thing come with Wi-Fi? That's like kind of my go-to joke. And this phone, I guess, actually does come with Wi-Fi.
Whoa.
So the joke doesn't totally work, but just my way of saying like, yeah, you got to give me more.
Yeah. When it comes to like technology stuff, it feels like the joke is.
It doesn't work as well with technology when everything has Wi-Fi now.
Okay. So that's a nostalgia for you, Langston. Jonah, it sounds like it's a nostalgia for you.
Yeah, I don't want it. It's too much money. It's a nostalgia. Just why?
Yeah. I would say it's a nostalgia for me too. Although I'm curious if the price point comes down a little bit. You know, I'm a consumer. I love products. Mm-hmm. So, but for the moment, it's a nostalgia for me as well. So I think we got two nostalgias and a yes-stalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think we're all agreed on all of them, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We're on the same page.
On the same page, totally.
We synced up and we made it happen together, and I like that.
Yes, same. Well, Langston, thank you so much for being here with us today. It was such a delight talking to you. And
what a pleasure.
Is there a place where people can find you other than your wonderful podcast, My Mama Told Me?
Yeah, you can find me at Langston Kerman on all platforms. It's just Instagram, Twitter, that It's at Langston Kerman. And yeah, you'll find me. I'll be there.
That was really fun, Vanessa. Thanks so much to Langston for joining us and everyone for listening. If you enjoyed that, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood. Vanessa, don't make me laugh. Where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones like And One Mixtapes.